welcome to this reading of City View. I'm Barbara Martin. City View is an alternative monthly published in Des Moines, and we will be reading the fourth episode from April of 2024. Our first article is another feature story entitled How Baseball Saved the Arts, a Futuristic Fantasy, written by Jim Duncan. The high arts are flirting with existential jeopardy. What are the high arts? Late Des Moines artist Don Dunigan explained, quote, Titanic defined it. The music on the first class level was high, and the music in steerage was low. So were the clothes and food. High art elitism has always been swallowed with a dose of suspicion at the grassroots level. The word haughty, derived from the French haute, as in haute cuisine. Cost-benefit analysis today discount the value of college degrees in many liberal arts. Electricians, plumbers, and carpenters scoff at job opportunities for art history, poetry, and opera majors. Still, higher education provides clarity about the highs and lows of the art world. John A. Fisher was a University of Colorado eclectic superstar. The school's professor emeritus of philosophy, he came from physics and published significant works on phenomenology, logical research, songs, and aesthetics. Hamlet versus Bugs Bunny, string quartets versus rap music, J. Alfred Prufrock versus Sam Spade. These contrasts evoke a familiar cultural divide, typically expressed as the differences between high and low art, he wrote. Fisher noted that traditional forms of art occupy the high ground and that new things don't, until they become traditional compared to the next new thing. A good part of the high arts' current problem is that they have remained relatively untouched by new things. By numbers of performances and productions, the most popular operas in today's world were all written considerably more than 100 years ago. The leading source of opera data, Opera Base, ranked the top 10 operas of 2018-19. The last year before COVID interruptions went viral. They were Giacomo Puccini, he lived 1858 to 1924, and Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, who lived from 1756 to 91. Each one wrote three. Giuseppe Verdi, 1830 to 1901, created two. Georges Bizet, George, 1838 to 1875, and Giacomo Rossini was 1793 to 1868, and each one of them did one opera. So, as the late Des Moines Metro Opera director Robert Larson told us, the 80s were music's greatest decade, and I don't mean the 1980s. Symphonic music is pretty much stuck in the same hardened mud. The top 10 most attended and performed symphonies in the year before the viral shutdowns included three by Johannes Brahms, who was born 1833 and lived till 1897, two each by Ludwig van Beethoven, who lived from 1770 to 1827, and Mozart again and Gustav Mahler, who lived from 1860 to 1911, plus one by Pierrot Ilyich Tchaikovsky, who lived from 1840 to 93. Now, if you go to the top 40, you get more by those same five guys, plus George Gershwin, who lived 1898 to 1937, and Aaron Copland, 1900 to 1990, Richard Strauss from 1864 to 1949, and Donizetti from 1797 to 1848, Bela Bartok from 1881 to 1945, and Sergei Prokofiev from 1890 to 1953, and Sergei Rachmaninoff from 1873 to 1943, and Bedřich Smetana from 1824 to 1884. The most recent work of those composers is 70 years old. That is not necessarily the problem. All of today's opera and classical music companies have valiantly tried to incorporate new stuff and adapt successes from the low arts. Des Moines Symphony will include a breakdance company in their April performance of Beethoven's Grosse Fugue, and the Metropolitan Opera of New York embraced the then new art form of radio 88 years ago with Live from the Met performances. Those developed new, younger audiences, including this writer. In recent years, the Met featured live performances shown in movie theaters like at Jordan Creek 20 and the Palms locally, once considered low art compared to live theater. Then television elevated them both. Those cinema performances became a significant revenue source before the pandemic. The Met performed an opera based on a movie based on a bestseller in Sing Sing Prison. Unlike Johnny Cash's concert at Folsom Prison, it was not made into an album that sold 3.4 million copies. In fact, the composer of Dead Man Walking, Jake Heggie, has not even become a household name outside of serious opera circles, and he is the most performed living opera composer of the last 20 years. Opera and symphonic audiences want to hear the stars of the 80s and even older guys' stuff. Earned income is not as important as endowed nonprofit businesses as it is to for-profit businesses. Does that matter? Most endowments come with the caveat, never spend the principal. Still reeling from disruptions carried by the virus from Wuhan, the Met admitted that this year that it had withdrawn nearly $70 million in emergency funds from its endowment to survive downturns in attendance. Both live operas in New York and worldwide cinema operas have lost significant. Lately, the Met has gone back to producing more popular traditional works compared to experimental, contemporary, and political operas. Central Iowa's high arts organizations seem to have weathered the pandemic better than most urban places. The Des Moines Symphony's 2020 IRS filing showed $3.2 million in total revenue and $3.5 million in total expenses. Of the revenue, $1.06 million came from the program services, mainly ticket sales and academy tuition. More came from gifts, grants, and contributions. Des Moines Metro Opera spent about $1.5 million more than it took in during fiscal year 2021. Those aren't bad numbers because earned income always needs to be supplemented by largesse of fans. And the DMMO emerged from COVID days by giving audiences traditional operas by Bizet, Gershwin, Prokofiev, Bartok, Tchaikovsky, Mozart, and Broadway darling Stephen Sondheim. New York Times looked at Chicago's Lyric Opera, the LOC, to describe the good old days and confusing accounting. It looked like a type. For many years, until as recently as 2001, Lyric Opera of Chicago reported selling more than 100% of its capacity. The company was not squeezing opera buffs into the aisles of its Art Deco Opera House, which seats at the base of a 45-story limestone skyscraper on the Chicago River. No, back then, Lyric largely sold out to subscribers who would donate tickets that they couldn't use back to the company, which could, and often would, sell them a second time. In the most recent fiscal year statement, the LOC showed a healthy budget surplus, but they did that by reducing the number of operas performed and adding Broadway musicals and hip-hop. Still, according to a Chicago Tribune story in 2017, annual revenue at the Lyric Opera has declined over the last 4 years. Another company's named Lyric have been cursed by times that inspire nothing beautiful or imaginative, the words Oxford used to define lyrical. Baltimore's Lyric Performing Arts Center, the LPAC, has a history that illustrates several problems of the haute arts. It operates out of a magnificent building modeled on Amsterdam's Concert Gebouw. It opened with the legendary Australian soprano Nellie Melba of Peach Melba fame, singing and was known as Lyric Opera House before Baltimore's opera company liquidated in 2009. After the opera folded, LPAC was thrown a $3.5 million life raft by Baltimore Ravens owners Art Modell. 10 years later, LPAC told Modell that his name would be removed from the center unless he doubled down on his gift. He declined. Recently, the LPAC was bailed out by a $3.4 million shuttered venue operators grant from the U.S. Small Business Administration. According to the Baltimore Sun, that means the concert hall can pay its bills as it begins its fiscal year and prepares to once again welcome live audiences. But the one-time grant isn't a permanent solution to the serious financial woes that existed long before the beleaguered 127-year-old institution was upended by the COVID pandemic. Citing financial hardship, Lyric Opera Virginia canceled its second season in 2013 after selling ticket subscriptions. The problem with many high arts companies is immigration, nothing current or political. Classical music companies in New York, Chicago, Baltimore, and many other U.S. cities were buoyed by 19th century European immigrants dedicated to the music of their homelands. Even today, the world's most successful opera cities in number of productions, audience, and performance are mostly European. Berlin unanimously tops all such lists. And of non-European cities, only New York and Sydney managed to sneak into the top 20 rankings. The European immigrants who made the Met a reality in 1883, that glorious decade, died, and their future offspring lost their love of the high arts in America's rock and roll melting pot. In the 18th and halfway through the 19th century, European immigrants dominated audiences, and people waited years to buy season tickets. Today, you and I could walk up to the box office for Yo-Yo Ma at the New York Philharmonic and buy a ticket without the scalper involvement, explained Des Moines Symphony Maestro Joe Jones. Art museums do not have the same problem of being stuck in the past like opera and symphony companies do. They remain current because independent galleries provide a farm system of emigrating talent while actually making a profit. Last year's enthusiastically received exhibition of young, living artist Robert Moore's paintings at Moberg Gallery teed up this summer's Robert Moore show at Des Moines Arts Center. That kind of synergy has transfused museums across the world for centuries. States of Being, DMAC's current feature exhibition, demonstrates the synthesis of opposing ideas in confrontation. It brilliantly illustrates the Hegelian dialectic by exhibiting creations of artists transplanted from one culture to another. Very different ones. It inspired this story by showing how new ideas spring from looking in places that shatter our comfort zones. As John Maynard Keyes famously said, "The expected never happens. It is the unexpected always." The great German painter Neo Rauch visited Des Moines in 2018 for the first ever museum showing of his drawings, which had been curated from Rauch's Leipzig studio floor by former DMAC director Jeff Fleming. Because Rauch grew up an orphan in the old East Germany, we asked him about his impressions of stepping out of the comfort zones and confronting antithetical situations. What inspired him the most? He says, "The antique stores, they are amazing, and we don't have anything like them in Germany. Our antiques are completely different. It is important for me to imagine the past. Different things are inspiration." What changed for him personally when the wall came down? "Well, as a painter, I miss the GDR. There was an emphasis on targeted excellence in education. Now, education is general and everyone is an artist. This is the best Germany ever. But I am happy to have grown up where and I could never live in Italy. There is too much harmony, beauty, and sweetness there. Italy is the motherland. Germany is the fatherland. Fatherland has higher expectations. Because opera and symphony companies need to recruit new and future patrons, musicians, and fans, we found an anti-crime program in Juarez, Mexico, inspiring. Juarez is the sister city of El Paso, but the similarities are pretty much limited to geography. The splendid TV series, The Bridge, illustrated the oppositions that border each other. Namely, that Juarez has been the murder capital of the world in years when El Paso's murder and crime rates were among the lowest in the United States. Juarez violinist Jove Garcia opened an after-school program that teaches 250 children how to play an instrument or sing in a choir. His main goals are to keep the children safe from gang life and give them an opportunity to better their lives. The gangs, they start doing drugs, drinking, and even getting kids, killing kids, killed. So I think the most important thing of this program is that we're saving lives," he told NBC News. The students are part of a youth orchestra called the Orquestra Sinfónica Esperanza Azteca. With the donations from local businesses and secondhand instruments donated by enthusiasts from all over, Garcia is also creating a future for classical music in Juarez. Well, what's baseball got to do with it, finally? Nothing is more antithetic to the arts than sports. Jocks are the in-crowd, and artists are the outsiders in scores of formulaic Hollywood movies. So, what if the high arts looked for dialectic resolution in sports? Two sports are distinctively viewed as more artistic than others. Soccer has been known as Joga Bonito since 1970, when Brazil's national selection won the World Cup with total football teamwork that has been emulated ever since. Interestingly, the Portuguese term Joga Bonito is used all over the world, but not in Brazil, where the same style is called Futebol Arte. Maybe soccer is too much like the high arts to provide an antithesis. After all, its fans sing and dance and play musical instruments. Baseball is unique. It is about going out and returning home rather than warring over territory and sacking opponents like American football, hockey, and baseball. It also has unique organization. Baseball's farm system has nourished the sport for more than 100 years. Major league clubs control talent that is developed at several levels. Developmental league, rookie league, class A, high A, double A, and triple A. Des Moines' professional baseball team is the triple A representative of the major league Chicago Cubs. Talent sometimes makes its way up the complete label, the complete ladder. Most progress through two or three levels. They progress through these levels before either making the big league or dropping out of the system. Baseball talent and opera orchestral talent both develop progressively. Wouldn't it be mutually beneficial for the Lyric Opera of Chicago or the Chicago Symphony to affiliate with opera and symphony companies in Des Moines? Young artists would surely appreciate a system with such growth opportunities. No doubt it would please Iowa audiences if a Chicago Symphony violinist or an LOC understudy performed in Iowa. It took baseball's minor league teams a long time to recognize that the system provided stars that could draw fans. Now it is heavily promoted when a Chicago Cubs superstar plays in Des Moines to rehab after injury. Also, young super prospects draw fans eager to see them on their way up. Minor league teams build bases for loyalty. Des Moines baseball fans are Chicago Cubs fans, more so than they are fans of much closer teams in Kansas City and Minneapolis. That's not just coincidence. Professional basketball and hockey teams saw the light that baseball's farm team shines. 100 years after baseball did it, they now have affiliated with the minor league teams. Both Des Moines hockey and basketball teams have such relationships with the major league teams in the Twin Cities. Farm systems could facilitate fabulous things like the Orquestra Sinfonica Esperanza Azteca. At the least, they could provide high arts entities with their most critical needs, developing new talent, audiences, and patronage. Des Moines Symphony Maestro Joseph Junta would be back at home plate with a Cubs-like affiliation, though he has more affinity with Chicago's other team. I was a student at Northwestern studying conducting. The Chicago Symphony was the place to be. Owner Bill Veck wanted a young conductor to direct the organ player in a rendition of Take Me Out to the Ballgame. So I did it in full tails. And there was a 5-second delay between the organ and being able to hear the crowd sing along. I think I lost 10 pounds in a minute and a half worrying if that was working. That was my first big conducting event, says Joseph Jun. And now for Center Stage by John Busby. Murder in Ankeny. Okay, we're talking theater here. Oh, those wicked thespians up north. Ankeny Community Theater embarks on a classic, lethal, suspense-laden romp with Dial M for Murder. It's no secret that influences from across the pond have saturated America's fascination with murder mysteries. Blame Britain's 19th-century Industrial Revolution, which stimulated its passion to read about murder. Why? 18th-century English persons often lived in small villages where their primal fears were of war, pestilence, or famine, and not being offered oft by their neighbor. The country's Industrial Revolution spurred a migration into cities, where new jobs awaited. Also, the unknowns of your neighbors, where you lived, and other specters of foreboding fueled fears. Writers and journalists of the day leveraged this anxiety and paranoia, feeding their readers with stimulating stories, triggering an obsession for nefarious death. A master of the macabre, Alfred Hitchcock, even gave one immortality in film, Dial M for Murder, while Terrence Young gave another unforgettable cinematic longevity, Wait Until Dark. Write Me a Murder, Wait Until Dark, and Dial M for Murder have a resilient appeal that beckons theatergoers. After beginning its season with three family shows, Ankeny Community Theater begins an intense trio of plays with this show. Murder aside, this is a character study about relationships, director Dan Chase shares. What better use of an intimate space than exploring the consequences of deceit and the lengths to which one will go in the pursuit of the perfect crime? Now, Summertime delivers a wealth of captivating camps and performance opportunities for students and their families. These special immersions give the students invaluable infusions of self-confidence, teamwork, creative expression, physical engagement, and more. Such early life experiences are beneficial regardless of where the participants' future aspirations carry them. Performing and visual arts groups and individuals offer a variety of experiences. Here are a variety of options. The Des Moines Community Playhouse, nationally acclaimed theater with offerings from youth to adults, is the hallmark of this organization's educational programming. And then Tallgrass Theater Company, with its critically praised Seedlings program in West Des Moines, and its partners with the West Des Moines Parks and Recreations, and expand their offerings to 17 classes covering an enticing range of subjects, as well as development and participation opportunities. That's tallgrasstheater.org/seedlings. And then the Des Moines Performing Arts, a new slate of programs for to fill their very popular free outdoor programming, bringing artists directly into communities and neighborhood parks, breaks down the barriers, and allows everyone to enjoy professional performing arts in their community. And this year's Des Moines Performing Arts is bringing 7 programs to audiences for free. So you might want to look into that. Visit dmpa.org. And that does it for this episode of City View. We've been reading from the April 2024 issue. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Services for the Print Handicapped. And if you have any questions, be sure to give us a call, 515-243-6833. Thanks again for listening.